Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We are in a really interesting time right now for both political parties in America. And on one hand, you've got the Democrats who have just no apparent leader at this point. But then on the other hand, you have Republicans who in about three and a half years are going to have Donald Trump done in politics effectively, and they're going to need to choose a new leader. So the nominees for 2028 are not just the nominees, in my opinion. I think they're basically going to determine who leads the parties moving forward. Usually, when we look into the polling, it's just kind of simple. It's a simple poll of who do you prefer? Do you prefer this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy? But YouGov had some fascinating polls come out just now for 2028 and the nominees for both parties. They're really a lot more telling than those classic polls. So let's get right into the data. This is what I want to show you. YouGov asked percentage of Democrats who would be disappointed if any of the following became the 2028 Dem presidential nominee. And this is a much more interesting question, in my opinion, than simply who do you want. So again, this is percentage of Democrats who'd be disappointed by this person. Harris is only at 19%, and that's the highest number. Again, it's plus four from April. They've asked this question before, but that's not much. I mean, only 20% would be disappointed. And by the way, again, that does not mean they're not going to vote for her. I'm sure a lot of Democrats are going to vote for Harris over, you know, whoever the Republican nominee is, even if they're disappointed. Under her, Bernie Sanders, I think that makes sense. He's very old. I think that's why they'd be disappointed. You got Cory Booker, also makes sense. Cory Booker sucks. Buttigieg, Warren, they're around 13 to 12%, and then it goes down to the nobodies. None of the above was 24%. 24% just said all of them are fine. Whatever. That's crazy, but it's fine. If you look, they did the same poll for Republicans. Percentage of Republicans who would be disappointed if any of the following became the 2028 GOP presidential nominee. I think Republicans, just based on the numbers, are a lot more in line with reality. Pence is at 44%. 44% say they'd be disappointed if he were the nominee. RFK Jr. is next at 29%. And Haley right behind in the same place at 29%. Trump Jr. at 21%. Cruz at 20%. We'll stop there. I mean, it just kind of goes down to other people. I actually think this one makes a lot of sense too. I mean, why in the world would anybody want Mike Pence to be in? And I think if you look, it really comes down to the people who would be most disappointed. It's mostly kind of the former Republican Party, like Pence and Haley, and then some people in the middle, like RFK Jr. And I think RFK Jr. makes perfect sense. For as much as he's done for MAHA and how awesome that is, he has no business being the Republican nominee. He is by no means a conservative. So I think that is really in line with reality. Trump Jr., I think, should be much higher. I don't think Trump Jr. should be even considered for the nominee. I think that's ridiculous. Personally, I've talked about that at length. So on one hand, right now, you've got Democrats who are game for anything, really. Because again, if we look back, these are not bad numbers. Harris is at 19%. That's the highest amount. Whereas Republicans, Pence was 44%. So Democrats are just good with whatever right now because they have zero leadership. If you ask, like, on a more candid level, for my job, I don't even know who to put in the thumbnails when I'm talking about the Democrat Party. I've had people in the comments be like, you put AOC in the thumbnail. You didn't talk about her. I'm like, the thumbnail, the title was about Democrats. Who do you want me to put in there? Like, I don't even know who their leader is. So I try AOC sometimes. I might try Gavin Newsom. I might try Kamala Harris. But it's like, nobody knows. Nobody knows. Believe me, if I had a clear leader, like when I talk about Republicans, I don't put a random person in. I put Donald Trump in. We know who the leader of the Republican Party is. It's Donald Trump. So again, on one hand, zero leadership. No one knows what's going on. And Republicans who are actually quite focused on what they don't like. They don't like RFK Jr. in terms of being the Republican nominee because he's got some liberal tendencies. And they don't like members of kind of the former Republican Party, the neocons. Now, if we look at the next poll, it continues to show the tricky place the Democrats are in. And again, this is not just a simple poll of, oh, who do you like more? I think it's much better. It says percent of Democrats who would consider voting for so-and-so. And this is interesting. Newsom is at 55%, up 24 from April. That's clearly just name recognition coming in. No one knew who he was before, even though he's governor of California. But now that he's kind of sparring with Donald Trump, some people like him a lot more. And they're actually considering. 55% would consider voting. Under that is Harris at 54, right behind. Buttigieg at 41, Waltz at 40, AOC at 38. And it just keeps going down from there. So you've got a lot of support. A lot of people would consider voting for Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris again, which is crazy. If you look over at the Republican side, again, which I think is much more reasonable, percent of Republicans who would consider voting for, Vance is at 65%. Very good. And DeSantis is very high as well at 40%. Now, if you look at the actual polling, Vance is up in the 50s and DeSantis is at like 8%. But when you talk about considering, then it starts to open things up. Would you consider voting for DeSantis? Most people say yes. Trump, not most, but many people rather say yes. Most people say Vance. Many people say DeSantis. Many people say Trump Jr. at 37%. No, guys, no. Enough with the Trump Jr. I think Trump Jr. is a good guy. He has absolutely no business being in politics. He has been very tied up with the Qatari government in terms of business. I don't think that this is a kingship that Donald Trump is passing on to his son, as some people have joked about. It's a funny joke. I got no problems with the joke. But politically speaking, this would not go over well. He would not win an election. He absolutely would not. So it's stupid. But Democrats have zeroed in on Newsom, Kamala Harris, Buttigieg, AOC, and Tim Walz. Republicans have zeroed in on Vance, DeSantis, Trump Jr., Rubio. The number for Republicans is much shorter, if you look, because they are more unified. The high numbers are there for only a few people for Republicans. If you look at the Democrats, the high numbers for a lot of them. Right now, if you're looking at DeSantis, who is in the second place behind Vance, I actually don't think he's going to run for president. I don't think he should. I think Vance is going to have to face off against the old Republican Party. I think those are the only people that are going to run against him. Maybe Nikki Haley again, maybe Chris Christie, maybe Ted Cruz, but probably not even Ted Cruz. Like, I think Nikki Haley is going to be the second place when it comes to the Republican nominee. It's not going to be close either. It's going to be like 10% to 90%. But I think if you're DeSantis right now, you know this is not your moment. Even though I think DeSantis is wildly popular, you know it's not your moment. Because as I've said, you can see the polling for Vance is very, very high. As high as Donald Trump's polling was this time last election cycle. As I've said before, I much prefer DeSantis. Why? Because he's probably the greatest Republican governor in American modern history, like ever, both in his ability to actually pass conservative legislation that benefits people, but also in his ability to persuade leftists, people on the, you know, on the liberal end, to become conservative. You've seen it happen in Florida. But J.D. Vance, on the other hand, has not had a lot of experience governing at all. He was only in the Senate for 2 years. He's now VP, which is the most useless job in the country. Not his fault, but just the reality. And he also does have some very troubling business and big tech billionaire connections, like with Peter Thiel, who's not trustworthy at all. So in any case, regardless of what I think it's clear that Vance will be the nominee. So what I think DeSantis should do is negotiate with Vance. I don't think that he should waste money or his energy or his reputation running against J.D. Vance. You should ask for a big, large cabinet role, maybe even the VP in exchange for not running for him. And then he can just step in 2036, and be the successor to J.D. Vance, just like J.D. Vance was with Donald Trump. One more piece of data that we got. This is another poll. You could see that Democrats and Republicans answered what their most electable presidential candidates were. And this is in the same poll. And I think this is very telling again about not, I'm not talking about the elites. I'm talking about the actual people voting, the voters in each party. People think in the Democrat Party that the most electable presidential candidates are Newsom, Harris, and Buttigieg. You've got in the Democrat Party, the straight white male at number one, the guy who made up all the COVID rules and then didn't follow any of them, who has like a poop city when he was mayor of San Francisco, who's done a horrible job in California. You've got Harris, who just lost to Donald Trump, and is like one of the worst politicians in history, can't run a primary at all. And then you've got Buttigieg, who literally had children with his husband pledge allegiance to the gay flag. Those are the people they think are the most electable. Then you've got the Donald Trump Party. It is the Donald Trump Party. You've got the Republican Party that says Vance is the most electable. After that, it's Trump Jr. and then DeSantis. Vance at 53% easily. I mean, I think he is very electable in many ways. Very good speaker. Again, I have some political differences with him, but I think he is electable. He's very reasonable, very well-spoken, very good at debating. Trump Jr. is absolutely crazy. I don't know what these people are doing. It looks like 10% of the Republican Party do not know anything about politics. That's fine. And then DeSantis at 7%. All of that makes sense. So all in all, these polls say much more, again, about the political party's voting body than the people in the actual polls. Republicans are unified. They're realistic for the most part. Democrats are completely off when it comes to electability. They do not know what it means to be electable. I think that's going to have huge consequences when it comes to garnering that independent support, because if Democrats are very electable in the Democrat body, that only does them so well in a general election. If Republicans actually know what's electable, they're going to take in all that independent support and win. So I think that gives Republicans a huge edge in 2028. Before we get back to the news, guys, I want to let you know about my new Substack. Substack is a weekly newsletter that comes right to your email, completely free to you, where I talk about some things that I'm not able to talk about on the show, either because of big tech or I just didn't get around to it. So go check it out right now. The link is in the description below. Over time, I've grown to really like Bill Maher, but his atheism really betrays him when it comes to politics. I think it's one of the biggest reasons why his political opinions are off. However, Ben Shapiro properly explained to Bill why the United States is a Christian nation. It's quite good. Take a look.
Bill, you and I agree on morality. I'd say like 87%.
Morality, 87%, but not right. From the Bible.
I have a question. Why?
Because it's for slavery.
Slavery. Why do you and I agree on morality like 87.5%? I'm a religious Jew. You're an atheist. Why do we agree on those things? I can give you my answer.
Yeah, please.
Because we probably grew up a few miles from each other in a Western society that has several thousand years of biblical history behind it. And so you can think that you hit that triple and you formed your own morality, but the reality is you were born morally on third base.
No, We got that morality from the Enlightenment, which was an anti-religious movement. The founding fathers, they weren't religious people. They were deists. They weren't particularly Christy.
Because cut flowers die, meaning that if the flower is the result of the root and then you cut the flower, you can live on with a secular humanistic morality, be a moral person, be a good person, but it does not systemically maintain. If there's no actual outgrowth from a basis of belief that this is fundamentally demanded of you by a higher power, because you can't get from atheism to reductive morality just by pure reason, right? Even every atheist will acknowledge this, that the values that you believe are not things that can just be reasoned to, because they assume things that are not in evidence, like the inherent value of humanity. I mean, we're pieces of meat wandering through space. What's the inherent value of that? These are all religious, faith-based premises. You don't have to believe in God to believe in those things, but they are logical jumps. They are leaps of faith, is what we would call that in religion. And so at least acknowledging that recognizes that we're all living in a world of faith, whether you believe in God or not. But here's the real question. If the sort of reasonable morality that you espouse is universal, then why is it not even remotely universal on planet Earth? Okay, it is only found in Christian-based societies. You will not find it unless it was grafted on later by, you know, us conquering someplace.
Christian-based? You saying this with the yarmulke on?
Yes, because Christians believe the first half of the Bible,
I'm working on them, Bill.
Well, as you know.
Okay, so right there is what leftists are afraid of. Just like Marx, they are fully aware that the United States is founded on Christianity. They hate the U.S., and so the natural thing for them to do then is to take out the thing that is holding the U.S., which is Christianity. So they hate that. Christianity, by the way, which is way better than any other ideology. The morality of Christianity, and this week has shown it better than anything, is what allows conservatives to not burn buildings down when Charlie was murdered. Leftists destroy everything when their leaders die. Literally everything. Not just George Floyd. I mean, that happened, sure. But there are countless other examples of that. BLM was not the only example. Christianity, on the other hand, teaches turn the other cheek. Christ had all kinds of righteous anger. I think a lot of Christians had righteous anger when Charlie Kirk was murdered. It's okay to be angry. It's even okay to be boisterous at times. But Christ never burned things down. It's why I condemned conservative commentators from getting too feisty after Charlie was murdered. Like, I get we were upset. I understand it was horrible. But we had people like Ben Shapiro, for example, who I agree with on like 98% of issues. But he was making videos saying, F you, without the censored part, to the shooter and to the leftists that were supporting him. And the thing is, I understand Ben's not a Christian, but we had Christian conservatives saying the exact same thing. And my point is simply this. Christ said, but I say unto you, Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. And that is the actual proper Christian response to anything in our country. Always, Christ literally says, I know this hurts a little bit, but pray for the shooter, bless Nancy Pelosi, love Barack Obama. It's not easy, but that is what the West was founded on. I think that's what Bill Maher does not understand. I actually think Ben Shapiro doesn't really understand that, you know, because he's not a Christian, but I think in his heart he does, because he's actually testifying that to Bill Maher. If we Christians forget that and do some of the nasty things and say some of the nasty things that people have said over the last few weeks, we damage the West just as much as the leftists. The progressive left is a cult. I talk about it all the time. I know you've heard about it a lot in my book, A New Cult. Go check it out right now if you haven't already. It's time to finally get it. I talk about some fun and crazy stories that a lot of people have not heard about. So go check it out right now. The link is in the description below. Thank you so much for watching this video, everybody. Please like the video so other great patriots like yourselves will see it. And you can tune in every single weekday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the live show, or you can watch another video right here.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.